You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Now, if you're involved with a university in any way, as a student, as the parent of a student, the grandparent of a future student, which is where I fit in, or as an academic, then you should read a blog on a site called profgrant.com. It's written by a man who appears on TV every now and then as a spokesman on public health matters. A professor of public health at AUT in Auckland, Grant Schofield, has written the blog, and here's a wee taste. Quote, New Zealand universities are facing serious budget shortfalls, dwindling domestic enrolments, and catastrophic international student declines. My employer engaged in a cost-cutting restructure, which I survived, only to find out they botched it so badly they had to re-employ everyone they sacked. We will start the process again mid-year. The University of Otago announced staff cuts will be in the several hundreds. Massey, Auckland, Victoria and Lincoln have already been and are in these processes. Only Canterbury has somehow shown growth. Overall, the sector is in trouble in New Zealand. It's the same in Australia. For most of my career, I was in love with the university and the role it had in society. I'm gutted now to have lost that love. I think I lost my love because we no longer deliver on the most important part of what we promised to do. We are no longer the critic and conscience of society. This is Professor Grant Schofield. Towards the end of his blog, he writes this. With all the news of declining student numbers, we recently had a curriculum restructure day at AUT. We wheeled out some past students who only say good things about the degree. We rearranged the deck chairs on the Titanic and leave congratulating ourselves on our teamwork and how we run the best program with the best people, and that everyone needs to work a bit harder to tell young people about how awesome our degree is. The point is, we are laughably out of touch with reality. We have annoyed a solid section of society. I reckon about half of society, maybe more. Everyone from the centre to the right, politically. That's because we have taken political, not scientific, positions. If there is a future for the university going forward, then we need to change, not back to what we were, but forwards to what the role in the world we will play is. This whole piece from Grant Schofield is really worth a read. We have known for some time about falling standards in the schools component of our education system. Some senior people on the inside of universities suggest the disease has spread to the tertiary institutions as well. Profgrant.com is where you will find it.
You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome to Wednesday. I hope you commemorated Anzac Day appropriately yesterday. As I mentioned on Monday, I was asked to be the guest speaker at the Waikaka Anzac service, or as the locals call it, Waikaka. It's a village in northern Southland, not far from Gore. A well-attended service in the village hall, which is next to the fire station, beside the footy field and across the road from the pub. Yes, it was a great old-fashioned community Anzac service, and I loved it. There would have been over 200 people there of all ages. We sang God Save the King. I've never done that before. We sang a couple of hymns, including Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, or as they call it in Wales, Bread of Heaven. Lots of groups laid wreaths, including the Fire Brigade, the school, the Scouts, the Cubs, the Rugby Club, and the Gore District Council. It was a wreath laid by the mayor of the moment, Ben Bell, with his chains on, no less, at 23 years of age. His chief executive, not surprisingly, wasn't there, but the TV cameras were. There's a piece coming up maybe this weekend on the Sunday program about the shenanigans at the Gore District Council. The MC spoke about a local man who became a Spitfire pilot for the RAF, but he died in the Battle of Britain. I made a speech, which seemed to be well received, and then we all marched or walked a couple of hundred metres down the road to the Waikaka War Memorial Monument for more wreath laying. The reading of the poem For the Fallen by Lawrence Binyon, with its famous lines about the going down of the sun and in the morning we will remember them. And then the bugler played The Last Post. Then we went back to the hall for a cup of tea and a sandwich. It was a ladies bring a plate affair. We had a yarn and I drove home. It was a memorable day. even though 200 people were standing out by the monument on the main road from Waikaka down to Gore, there was no traffic management plan and not a road cone in sight. I think one car went past. The driver very nicely slowed down. You see, it can be done. This is the Peter Williams Afternoon Show. Were you as disgusted as me about the story of the Auckland landlord who had his tenants evicted because they were weeks behind on their rent? And then he had his house wrecked in the daylight by a group of up to 22 people, he says. They were presumably the disaffected tenants and their friends. The landlord, whose name is Sandu, rang the police while the wreckage took place. The attack on the house went on for the best part of an hour. The police were called. They didn't show up. Why not? Their statement so far is just pathetic. Quote, they received a report of willful damage to a residential property in Papakura on April the 21st, the police say. The incident was believed to have occurred sometime between 4:45 p.m. and 5:45 p.m. At this stage, the file is currently being reviewed by staff and police will be making inquiries once it has been assigned to the appropriate team. Police will be in touch with the informant directly on the progress of the investigation as it advances. Unquote. Isn't that disgraceful? I bet Sandu, whatever his real name is, could give them a very good lead as to who was responsible for the damage. It wouldn't be gang-related by any chance, would it? So why are the police so slow to act? Is it because the landlord is Indian? And we don't care much about hard-working Indian migrants who have come to this country for a better life and an honest one. We prefer to let scumbags who don't pay their rent and wreck other people's property run free because, well, that's what we do now. And anyway, it's all the fault of those nasty colonizers. I mean, I am really angry about this incident. It's just another reason why the police commissioner must not be reappointed. Now, as the country's wages go up, so of course does the government's tax take. That's because more and more workers make more than $70,000 a year these days, which is where the 33% tax rate kicks in. $70,000 a year, by the way, about $33 an hour. Many as a truck driver and a semi-skilled tradie pulling that sort of coin, especially as they look to maintain their parity from the minimum wage. Now, the government tax take in 2022 from all sources, and these are the most recent figures available because the 2023 financial year number isn't available as yet. In fact, it hasn't finished until the end of June. The government tax take in 2022 was almost $108 billion. In 2021, it was just over $97 billion. Much of that 10% increase in tax would be due to what's known as bracket creep. You go over $48,000 a year in income and your tax rate increases from 17.5% to 30%. But a new survey from the Taxpayers Union has found we want our tax brackets indexed to inflation. So the government can't get all that extra money just because of bracket creep. And the results of the survey are absolutely definitive. 65% of those surveyed are in favour of tax bracket indexation against inflation, and only 19% are against the idea. And those 19% are probably public servants already making 100 grand a year who work getting to spend all the extra tax that's collected. The policy, frankly, is a no-brainer. National have punted it for years. It's about time it became law. The lefties want a fairer tax system. Here is a very easy way to do that. Back in 2020, I remember despairing that among 320 million people, or whatever the population of the United States is, the only two they could find to run for president were Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Do you realize, and I know we still have 18 months or so to go before the November 2024 presidential election, do you realize that the chances of the same two geriatrics squaring off for the top job again are frighteningly high? In the last few days, Biden has declared that he's running again. The only other Democrat who's declared so far is Robert Kennedy Jr. And there are many reasons why he won't win the nomination. One, you seldom take out an incumbent. Two, he has a speech disability, which makes him a barely more credible presenter than Biden. And three, despite some huge wins as an environmental lawyer, his leadership of Children's Health Defence means he will be constantly tagged, even by the big Democrat papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post, as an anti-vax conspiracy theorist. Anybody who's read his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, will realise that he is far, far from that. That book was a bestseller. Nobody, especially Fauci, has taken him to court for defamation in relation to the book. Read it and realise how much the medical industry everywhere has been captured by the pharmaceutical companies. But the point is, I think he's got no show of winning the Democrat nomination. Then on the other side, the Republicans, who should have had 4 years to get rid of the stench of Trump and his crazy theories and his deeply flawed personality, have found themselves once again with Trump as the front runner. It's just extraordinary. The young, popular, fresh-faced man for the future, Ron DeSantis, is so far behind Trump in the polls, he hasn't even formally declared his candidacy. You know that Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are not young men themselves, but when they see America putting up Joe Biden, who'll be 81 at the time of the election, and Donald Trump, who'll be 78, Putin and Xi Jinping, who were both born in the 1950s, must think, gee, our time is not far away. There are many of us who like to get around the country for various reasons and like to get there as quickly and as conveniently as possible. Therefore, if you live outside the main cities, you hope that you can get access to a regional airport and catch a flight to Auckland or Wellington or wherever you want to go. In days gone by, Air New Zealand provided these services, and if you lived in Whakatane, Whanganui or the Kapiti Coast, you could catch a flight to the Big Smoke from those towns. But Air New Zealand quickly found out they were losing a heap of money on those services, so not surprisingly, they closed them down. Into the breach stepped Air Chathams. Yay, said the locals. But now it's revealed the only reason Air Chathams keeps operating those services is because the local councils have chipped in literally millions to keep the flights almost viable. Kapiti Coast District Council is the worst. Air Chathams flies from there to Auckland. Even the CEO at Kapiti Airport, or Paraparaumu Airport, says there needs to be 400,000 passengers a year flying out of the airport to make it viable. You know what the number currently is? 25,000. Kapiti Council have provided, this is almost laughable, they've provided $1.5 million or thereabouts in loans and grants to Air Chathams to keep the service afloat. The reality is that in all three cases, Kapiti, Whakatane and Whanganui, there is a much bigger airport with a range of flights to a variety of destinations with more flexible times and cheaper prices within an hour's drive. Councils should always be taking a good hard look at the value they get from their spending. And subsidising loss-making airline routes is just not good value.
You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
This is Reality Check Radio, RCR, the Peter Williams Afternoon Show. I'm a great believer in the old adage, the customer is always right. So if a movie or a TV show or a book is enjoyed by millions, then it must be pretty damn good. That's why I'm always very suspicious of government funding for the arts, because if an orchestra or a writer can't attract enough consumers for their product, then I don't see why, as a taxpayer, I should have to help them out. I feel the same way about government-subsidised sports events too, by the way, including the New Zealand Golf Open. Anyway, there's a columnist for the Otago Daily Times called Jean Belchin. She must be very bright and talented because she's at Oxford University at the moment on a Rhodes Scholarship. But last week, she got my dander up. That's because she stated unequivocally in her column in the paper, quote, quite frankly, J.K. Rowling is not a very good writer, unquote. Excuse me? Maybe Ms. Belchin has overlooked the fact that Joanne Rowling's stories about Harry Potter and his mates at Hogwarts have sold 600 million books and been translated into 84 languages. The books have done the world a favour in the last 25 years, as literacy skills among the young people have decreased, never more so than in New Zealand. The Harry Potter books have introduced literally hundreds of millions of young people to reading, and more importantly, to imagination. But Gene Belchin says J.K. Rowling has, quote, retroactively shoehorned diversity by making Dumbledore gay late in the series. She says the novels are peppered with lazy and damaging stereotypes, and her characters are stagnant. The prose, Ms. Belchin asserts, is plodding and formulaic. Now, maybe Jean Belchin isn't serious, but if she is, I think it is best she stays in her ivory academic tower and doesn't insult the rest of us. Now, if you're worried about your house dropping in value, then maybe you can take some heart from the latest immigration figures. They show that in the month of February, there were 11,700 new arrivals into New Zealand who intend to stay long term. Now, this is great for those companies short of workers, but the big question is, where are they going to live? Net migration of nearly 12,000 in a month suggests an annual number around 100,000. And even at the height of the inflow under John Key and Bill English, I think the highest annual number was about 72,000. It may settle down, but the point is the borders are open and the migrants are coming in their thousands. Some will have money, some won't. But their common thread is they all need a place to live. Have we got enough houses? Are we building enough? Maybe we are at the moment, but can we keep up the pace as material costs increase and skilled tradesmen look to Australia with their pay packets there of 20 to 30% bigger? The government policy was to turn the tap off on immigration. Now it seems it's back on and it is gushing. We struggled with our infrastructure during the last big immigration surge up till 3 years ago. Have we learnt anything since? I doubt it.
You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
This is Reality Check Radio, the Peter Williams Afternoon Show. I never watched Tucker Carlson all that much. When I did, it was because somebody had shown me a video with an interview that he'd done or a monologue that he'd delivered. He is very good at his job. His opinions are forthright and found a sympathetic audience amongst the Fox News acolytes. Yes, the Democrats hate him, but 3 million viewers a night can't be wrong. Now he's gone, though. Well, from Fox News anyway. I imagine he'll be back online or on air really soon. The market for his thinking, you see, is just too substantial. But he must have annoyed Fox's owner Rupert Murdoch just one time too many, or rather 787 million times too many, that being the price that Fox have to pay to settle a defamation suit that Carlson may have helped bring on with his opinions on voting during the 2020 presidential election. There was also the matter of a sexual harassment case against him as well, which would have sped up his exit. The left hated him, of course. The New York Times said last year that Tucker Carlson had constructed the most racist show in the history of cable news, although it also admitted it was the most successful as well. The Fox Corporation share price dropped 2.9% yesterday, I note, wiping $500 million off the value of the company. Tucker Carlson was paid between $15 and $20 million a year. Looks like he was worth every cent.
You've been listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio. Remember, you can catch Pete's full show combining smooth sounds and candid commentary on everyday issues for Kiwis and the Peter Williams Afternoon Show on our live broadcasts, 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. Right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.